Chapter 2, False Gods and Lies. Delightful hour on duty at Robert's door. There wasn't much point in the actual work of guarding the king. There was an army of gold cloaks between the palace gates and him. Anyone who actually got this far would have to have an army of his own. In which case, Jaime would be fighting them well before they got to the king's bedchamber. But he was used to the pointless list by now. He'd long since learned that being a king's guard was about false show in almost every respect, when it wasn't about watching your king commit murder or make a sloppy disgrace of himself. He liked to use the time to rethink fights in his head. Not his own. The ones he'd fought himself were all as good as he could have made them. But the ones that other men had fought. What he'd have done to win it quicker, or win it the other way around. How he could have made the victory cleaner, more perfect. That was true, at least. When you had a sword in your hand and the enemy had one in his, skill against skill, and it didn't matter what twat either of you were serving. A magical place you could only ever reach in those few shining moments of battle. And he went back in his mind when he couldn't contrive an excuse to get there in life. He especially enjoyed thinking up ways he'd have killed Robert at the Trident, in Rhaegar's place. Not just for the pleasure of imagining Robert dead at his feet, although that wasn't inconsiderable. Mostly, it just made for a good, interesting fight. These days, Robert wouldn't have lasted more than a pass. It would only be butchery. But 17 years ago, he'd swung that warhammer like a god among men, fast even in full plate. All he'd ever needed was to land a single blow. It would have been a serious challenge to get in through his guard and out again without having his own skull or chest crushed in, with the complications of the uneven terrain and the mud and the river. Jaime still would have won, of course, but it would have been a challenge. Rhaegar had gone down in less than 5 minutes, poor thin dragon. Jaime was considering the possibilities of going through the side armor when Cersei came boiling down the corridor under full sail, her face hard and furious. "We're idiots," she spat at him and shoved through the door and straight into the room without a pause, even though it was perfectly audible from inside that Robert was entertaining. Jaime frowned and followed her in. Robert had one bare-breasted girl on his lap and another beginning to disrobe, and he said, "Gods, woman, don't you get the horse out," she said to Jaime savagely, and wheeled to Robert. 20 wagons of grain gone to the north. Do you want to know who they're going to feed?"
"For the sake of the gods," Robert snapped at her, standing up with his shirt hanging open.
Jaime had to jerk his head to the girls, and they were already scuttling for the door with alacrity. Baelish, his brothels supplied most of Robert's comforts, had trained them properly to disappear when the queen came on the scene. After Jaime had made clear to him that if any of them ever caused Cersei to notice them in any way beyond the most basic fact of their presence, both whore and procurer would have a very unpleasant time of it.
"There's 200,000 wildlings at the wall. Do you really want them coming through to fall upon us all?"
"Your darling Ned's son has just let them through," Cersei said. "What?" Jaime said incredulously. Robert was staring at her with his eyes bulging. "They bent the knee to him," Cersei said. "Ned Stark's son now has the biggest army in the Seven Kingdoms, and you've sent him our grain to feed them with." Even as she was speaking, there was a sharp knocking on the door. It was thrust open a moment later, and Ned Stark was standing there, looking ox-stunned himself, another piece of paper in his hand.
"Robert, I must speak with you at once," he said.
"What the hell has your cub done?" Robert roared at him. "He's let the wildlings through the wall?"
Stark paused long enough to look at them all, frowning, and said, He's used them to man the wall. As if that made it all right. And then he said, Robert, the Night King is coming. That is what the wildlings were fleeing. The Great War will be at the wall in less than 4 months' time. He stopped there, expectantly. None of them said a word. Jaime didn't ever decide on his riposte until he saw what the enemy had done, whether with swords or words. And then the right response always came to him naturally, without trying to think of it. Only absolutely nothing was coming in answer to any part of this. Is this a joke? Cersei said, finally. Stark closed his mouth hard in the way he did when he thought Cersei was being selfish and unreasonable. That happened quite often, so Jaime could recognize the sentiment without any difficulty. And then said, in his stiff, measured, I hate you horrible southerners tone, The wildlings and the Night's Watch have both seen the White Walkers abroad for months, raising companies of whites for the Night's King. Rob writes that they've learned he will march on the wall with winter when the first long night comes, and they have only 94 days left before then. Jaime stared at him, almost fascinated. It was such incredible nonsense, was the thing. Stark even looked exactly the same way he ever did, stolid and grim and completely serious. He couldn't have carried it off better if he'd spent the last 20 years on a stage, and he didn't even leave it there. He kept going. Robert, we must get him more men and arms and... I don't know whether you've lost your mind or if you think we've lost ours, Cersei said. His, surely, Jaime put in, because there wasn't any other reasonable explanation. Neither of them so much as looked at him, though. They were squaring off, two snarling predators ready to go at it over the delicious stag, who was staring between them both with an incredulous gaping. We're not that stupid, Cersei said. First, there's an army of wildlings, and when that doesn't get you all the grain you want, suddenly there's an army of whites and ghouls and bogeymen instead. And of course you've had to let the wildlings through the wall to help you stop them. Let me guess, if we don't supply them, they'll lose control. They'll start raiding and pillaging in the south. The whole army of them. If we don't supply them, they'll be dead, and all of us soon after, Stark said. Do you not understand what it is we're facing? An army that needs no food, no sleep. An army that will raise our own dead to fight for them. Have you never read anything of the Great War? He really sounded absolutely earnest, and Jaime could tell that even though Cersei was still in a rage, she was beginning to come around to his own conclusion. Her fury was ebbing, leaving only incredulous outrage behind. Stark realized it too, his own face changed, hardening, and he said, with all of things, contempt. Or do you think it's only fairy stories, and we in the North naught but frightened children, because you've lived your whole life with false gods and lies? He didn't wait for her answer. He turned to Robert. Robert, you aren't of the North, but you know me, and you know my word. Your word on what, exactly? Cersei said. That your son has sent you a note telling you there's an army of monsters coming. Has he actually seen them with his own eyes, may I ask? How many are they? Stark turned on her and said through his teeth, You think I've invented this story, or Rob has, to trick you and steal from you, because we fear the winter? Perhaps that's what your house would do. I fear we're not so clever in the North. When winter comes and hunger with it, we know only how to endure it and have a care for one another. We don't cheat our neighbors. Yes, but we aren't your neighbors, are we? Cersei said. We're rich, smug southerners with our luxuries and our fine clothes full of lies and trickery and selfishness. She smiled at him, her lioness smile, the one she wore when she disemboweled people. And your son, your loyal, honorable son must be beyond question, even when he's going around calling himself the king in the north.
What?
Robert thundered out. Yes, that would get him. Cersei turned and held out the message to him. Robert seized it, and his eyes were bulging almost instantly. He all but put down his antlers and charged, storming across the room to Ned with the note crumpled in his fist, and stopping with his big red face bared inches away from Stark's face to start roaring about how his darling boy was a traitor and how he'd have his head chopped off. Cersei stepped back from them both and let the two of them go at it. Her eyes met Jaime's across the room, a little smile curling her lip. He smiled back. It was really quite entertaining. Robert would bellow and paw the ground for any little thing, of course, but ordinarily Stark kept his voice level, even when he was utterly fed up. The dire magical peril that was menacing his son had apparently pushed him past bearing, though, and it turned out that when a wolf was cornered, it snarled back like a demon. Jaime didn't think anyone had shouted at Robert in at least 17 years. He wondered if Stark might even hit him. That would have been amazing. Jaime couldn't imagine anything more delightful than finally getting a chance to try Stark's arm in defense of Robert. He could kill the man in front of Robert's face. Sadly, Ned didn't go quite that far. He stopped himself and said, in the tones of a man putting an iron muzzle over his own mouth, I don't care what reports the Queen has had. Think a moment, Robert. Is Rob to have forgotten not only you, but me? How can he name himself a king while I live? And he's meant to have done this while half his family is in the Red Keep. This is some mishearing. And then he looked coldly at Cersei. Or a spy who knows he'll be rewarded for spreading lies. Then if it's a lie, let your son come and dispel it. Cersei said, cool and sweet. Let him come to the Red Keep and swear fealty to Robert and to Joffrey after him, and prove that he intends no treason. Ned stared at her. Rob is fighting on the wall. No, he's not, Cersei said. He's made peace at the wall, hasn't he? There's no sight of this army of monsters yet. Let him appoint someone to command in his stead while he comes here. And as soon as he does, Cersei went on, taking a few steps towards him, smiling, and proves to us all the truth of this terrible foe, we'll send grain and men and arms, and nothing more before then. She's finished, through her teeth, letting them finally show. Ned looked from her to Robert, who was still breathing hard and heavily and had his eyes on Cersei. He looked over at Stark with cold suspicion. You heard her, he said, his voice low and furious. Send for that whelp of yours, and don't you dare ask me for so much as a rusty knife blade until he's come and bent the knee. Ned stood looking back at him for a moment, his own face gone grim and hard as stone. And then he turned and left the room. I think Robert might just need a new hand before too long, Cersei said afterwards, pouring Jaime a cup of wine in her rooms, in a celebratory mood. Let's not celebrate just yet, Jaime said, tossing the scrap of message down after he'd read it over himself. If Robb Stark really does have an army of 200,000 wildlings, he might just decide to bring them south with him. Jaime hadn't paid much attention to Robb Stark back at Winterfell. He'd been a boy, and he was still a boy. He would only be, what, 17 now? He'd seemed determined to be a chip off the old block. Jaime remembered him taking his vows as Warden of the North before they left, all big blue eyes and stern mouth, as earnest and mortally serious as if he meant every flowery word, even though he was swearing them to a half-drunk king who'd forgotten his own lines twice and had to be prompted by the maester. He'd seen the boy drilling once, with the bastard, and had written him off otherwise. Snow had been the only real threat in the making there. But apparently that had been a mistake. A man didn't need to be dangerous with a sword if he had an army of 200,000 men. And maybe 2 years of being the Lord of Winterfell had given Robb Stark more of a taste of power than Ned had ever acquired. But Cersei smirked. The Stark boy won't have his army for long. One of our men is in command of the grain caravan. I told him to check at the Crossroads Inn for word before he kept going. I've already sent a raven to turn them back. And when Robb Stark can't feed his horde of savages, I imagine they'll start looking for food a little closer to home.
You must send for Robb at once, Catelyn said, low. Ned, you know the king is a suspicious man and jealous of strength at arms. He sent his own brother Stannis away to Dragonstone after the war. If Robb doesn't come, he'll think the worst and...
I cannot, Ned said.
He couldn't help pacing the room like an animal in a cage. He felt equally trapped. Robb was in the north, where he should have been and wasn't. But if he called Robb south, it would be Bran, not 12 years old.
Bran can't... He's not ready.
Lord Commander Mormont is there.
He's not a Stark,
Ned said.
A Stark must answer when the Night's King rides.
And when he turned to come back round, Catelyn was staring at him, her face a little bewildered. And he heard his own words and stopped where he stood, his heart pounding.
A Stark must answer when the Night's King rides, he repeats softly.
And it felt as if someone else were telling him, with his own voice, a thing he needed to know.
Oh, Robb, he said, his voice breaking. It should be me.
He sat down heavily upon the wide bench against the wall and put his hands over his face. Catelyn came to sit beside him, her hands on his shoulders, trying to give him comfort. But there wasn't any to be had for this. For his boy, standing alone at the wall against the night.
You were right, he said hoarsely. I never should have come south.
But that regret wouldn't help Robb now, or the north. He lowered his hands and sat up.
We must get Robb more men somehow, and grain. I'll buy as much as we can afford in the markets. We've a store of silver back at Winterfell. I'll find someone who will give me credit. Catelyn, write to your father and ask him to lend me as much coin as he can spare when I cannot say when I will be able to repay it, and to send Robb as many men as he can.
Let me ask Peter to help us, she said. He's master of coin. He'll know how we can best raise funds and how to get the best price. He nodded, and when Baelish came to his study the next day, made himself thank the man and say,
You were right before. I should have listened to your advice.
I'm afraid it wouldn't have done much good, Baelish said. The first caravan's already been turned back.
What?
Catelyn said, coming stricken to his side.
I have some friends at the Crossroad Inn, Baelish said. They let me know of interesting comings and goings. And I've heard from them that a caravan of grain wagons arrived yesterday night, and this morning, after a raven from the capital, they went back the way they'd come. I'm sorry.
Ned ran a hand over his face and looked round himself in desperation, as if he could find some grain somewhere in the room.
However, I might be able to find another source for you, but I'm afraid the king might not be very pleased if you use it.
If Robert refuses to send us grain while Robb stands at the wall to defend his kingdom, and you can show me where else to get it, I'll not let his anger bar the way, Ned said. He can dismiss me if he likes, and I'll be grateful for the right to go home.
Baelish inclined his head, and 3 days later, Ned went with him to one of his brothels, a place set in the eastern wall of the city. Ned followed him upstairs and into a wide, pleasant room with large windows, facing over the water. And Sir Loras Tyrell rose from a table to meet him, smiling.
I've heard some very odd rumors, Lord Stark, Loras said, as Baelish poured them wine. Half the city is saying that your sons raised an army of wildlings to invade the south.
That's a lie and the queen's doing, Ned said grimly.
He's done no such thing. I don't know if you'll believe me. Robert himself refused to take my word. There is an army coming to breach the wall and come south, but it's not an army of wildlings or of men at all. There's a long night soon to fall, and the Night's King is on the march. The great war is come again.
Loras glanced at Baelish, who shrugged a little and smiled back, as if to say he knew no more of it, as he did not.
It is a little hard to believe, Lord Stark, Loras said, if you'll forgive my saying so.
Ned looked out at the sun-dappled water, the trees with their leaves only barely touched with gold around the edges.
How can I not forgive you? He said, weary. It is hard to believe, here in the south, in the sunlight. But Rob has written it to me in his own hand, and I feel the truth of it myself. That's why the wildlings have agreed to take service with him and help him to man the wall.
So he does have the men, Sir Loras said.
Aye, and the wildlings are hardy folk and used to privation, Ned said. But they don't know much of siege warfare or how to defend a keep. He still badly needs more men-at-arms and cavalry, and he must have food for them all.
He felt half despairing, saying it aloud. He didn't see how it was to be done. But Sir Loras said,
The granaries of the Reach are bursting after this long summer, and we have some stores from 9 years ago that must be used soon or go bad. I think we can send you 100,000 measures of grain.
Ned stared at him, taken aback.
Sir Loras, I hardly know what to say. I'm more grateful than I can express for whatever you will spare me, but I fear my purse cannot stretch that far. Even if you would give it on credit, I can't promise you in any honesty that I could ever repay it.
My lord, Loras said, our coffers are full as well. Save your coins for arms and to hire men. If you want to pay Highgarden back, there's something you have to give that we would value far higher than money. My sister Marjorie is of an age to be wed.
Ned paused and said slowly, You'd have me betroth her to Rob. Your sister's a woman of the far south. Would she truly wish to be Lady of Winterfell?
Loras smiled.
I haven't met your son, Lord Stark, but a man who can face a wildling army and persuade them to stand with him against an army of the dead sounds like a man whom I'd be glad to entrust my sister.
Ned didn't answer for a moment. He understood the offer better than he would have wished. The Reach did not want their daughter to be Lady of Winterfell. They hoped, equally false, for what Robert feared. Rob had a great army at his command now, larger than any force in the south, and with it they thought he meant to make himself a king. The king in the north. They surely heard that rumor as well. And when instead Rob sent his wildling army home with his thanks after the war, they would regret the bargain they'd made in hopes of a crown. Ned ran a hand over his jaw. There was only one answer to be given, and he knew he had to do it. But he felt its falseness in his mouth, sour and uneasy. And yet he also couldn't answer Sir Loras for such an offer by accusing him of a plot of treason.
Slowly, he said, Sir Loras, this is what I would say. You are right. You have not met my son, and neither has your sister, and you offer us a great gift.
Loras was listening, a small frown on his face.
In return for it, I would pledge him to her, but not the other way round. When the war is over, if my son lives, he'll come and be made known to her, and he'll be hers to claim if you and she still wish it. But I'd leave her free to change her mind and not consider herself bound in honor to him. This war will last a long time, and the winter afterwards still longer, even if we win.
And as he said the words, he knew them for truth. A cold and dangerous truth, settling heavy like a weight upon his shoulders. "That's a most generous offer," Sir Loras said. He sounded a little puzzled, as though he could not work out why it would have been made, and was wary of something he could not understand. "Indeed, options are often even more valuable than firm agreements," Baelish said, smiling a little in his thin way. "But then, I've noticed that Lord Stark is always most anxious to give fair return."
"And this is still little enough for what you have offered me," Ned said to Loras. "You have my word that House Stark will not forget it, if we ever can answer your need."
Loras inclined his head, slowly. "Then on behalf of Highgarden, I'm honored to accept. I will send a raven to my father directly. We will send the grain by sea. Where shall it go?"
"To the harbor on Bear Island, if you will, sir," Ned said. "House Mormont holds there, and they will bring it in. See that it gets to the Night's Watch."
They stood and clasped hands. "If you will allow me to make one more suggestion," Baelish said, rising with him. "The king is a man of short temper. We three here know that your intentions are only to help protect the realm, but until he sees incontrovertible truth of the Army of the Dead, he is likely to see this agreement as defiance. I would suggest that the course of prudence would be for you both to leave the city as quickly as possible with your households."
"I cannot go," Ned said. "I am still Robert's hand until he chooses to dismiss me."
"Forgive me, Lord Stark, but Lord Baelish is right," Sir Loras said, and he sounded as though he were taken aback. "The king will dismiss you to a cell for this."
"That is his privilege," Ned said grimly. "I've sworn to serve him, and to abandon my post would be a betrayal. I must keep my oath and trust he'll learn the truth soon enough."
Loras and Baelish glanced at each other, and then Baelish said, "And would you also grant him the privilege of putting your wife and children in their own cells?" Ned could scarcely bring himself to imagine that Robert would do such a thing, and yet Robert had already refused to believe him, had already refused the aid that was his to give. He drunk deep of the queen's poison, and if he couldn't be persuaded to put the cup aside...
"No," Ned said, after a moment, low with sorrow. The risk couldn't be run. If Rob and Bran were both lost, "I'll send Catelyn and Sansa and Rickon to River Run, to their grandfather. Arya may be there already."
"A wise decision," Baelish said. "If you'll permit, I can arrange for a discreet carriage to be at your door within the hour." Ned looked at him surprised, but after a moment he inclined his head a little. Another thing that had to be done, though he felt the same uneasy distaste, a sense of motives he didn't wish to understand. He kept his silence while they rode in yet another discreet carriage back to the Red Keep, coming in through a side gate with only a single guard upon it, who nodded to Lord Baelish as they drove past. The traveling carriage had somehow managed to reach their gates even before his own, carrying the message to depart. And even as he climbed out, Sansa was running to him in tears, protesting.
"Father, I can't go. You can't make me. I'm promised to Joffrey. I'm going to be his queen and have his beautiful lion babies."
Ned took her by the shoulders and kissed her forehead and said quietly,
"Sansa."
And then held her and looked her in the face until her breath slowed and the tight, frantic clenching went out of her. And she was looking back, ready to listen.
"The world is not what we thought it was when we came south," he said gently. "For the Night's King is riding to the wall. All our lives, all the realms of men, are in the deepest danger."
Fear touched her face, and a pang of sorrow stung him that he had to make her feel such a thing.
"Your brother will soon be fighting in the north. We cannot divide his strength with fear for us. I must stay and try to persuade the king to give him aid, and you must go with your mother to help her care for Rickon and Arya. And... He spoke haltingly. He didn't want to say the words, but he found he had to. Another terrible burden. To have to imagine such a thing coming to his girl, and yet he had only this one chance to warn her. And gods forbid, you must make yourself ready if the call should fall to you. This is your duty as a Stark now. Winter is coming. Her eyes were still full of tears, and her mouth trembled a little. She'd gone pale. But then she bowed her head and whispered softly, echoing him, "Winter is coming." She made no more complaints, but went to gather her things. Ned turned away, heartsick, and saw Lord Baelish, who still stood beside his own carriage, watching her go. There was a look of satisfaction upon his thin face, of something accomplished, and seeing it, Ned said to him slowly, "Is this what Highgarden truly wants in return for their aid, for me to take Sansa from the court?" Baelish stiffened a little, hesitating. "You needn't fear that I'll go back on the bargain." Baelish paused and then spread his hands. "As I said, Lord Stark, options are the most valuable commodity." And he thought, House Tyrell thought, that with this bargain struck and Sansa sent away, Robert would break the betrothal between her and Joffrey, and then Margaery Tyrell might have, as they thought, a choice of crowns. Ned nodded. It was nearly a relief to know that he had given them fair value. "I'm still grateful to them and to you. What I am, I cannot change. I must not change," he added with a sharp certainty. "For that, I can't apologize. But the truth is that in this city, you are the true man, and I have as much place in it as a wolf does in the fold. And I'm sorry that I've treated you with disrespect for it." He drew a deep breath and released it again. "I would ask one last favor of you." "What service can I do for you, Lord Stark?" Baelish said, still smiling, though a wariness had come into his eyes. "I must remain here until Robert has released me from his service. Will you go with Catelyn and the children in my stead, and keep them safe in whatever way you can?" Ned asked. Baelish went still. "I know you love her, and would have her for your own. That will be for her to say, should I die. But I would call on you to guard her and our children for her sake, and for the sake of the world. Will you answer that call?" Baelish's narrow face had begun startled at the question, and was now swiftly going more deeply baffled. He turned partly away, blinking, his shoulders hunching, as though he felt the weight descending upon him, the burden of the call and what it would mean to answer. Slowly he raised his head to stare back at Ned, his eyes gone wide with confusion, and not a little fear. His mouth worked a little, as though he struggled to find the words. But then the doors opened, and Catelyn came out in her blue cloak, Rickon holding onto her hand with Shaggy Dog at his heels, Sansa following with Lady and Septa Mordain. Ned turned to them. The children came to his arms one last time, then went to the carriage and climbed in. He took Catelyn by the shoulders and kissed her lips, then her forehead, and held her a moment. Then let her go, out to arm's length, and looked at Baelish. The fear was in his face, still, but he still looked at Catelyn with that longing which had sparked Ned's anger. Not from any jealousy, but that Baelish should have taken aim at a woman so far above him, who had never wanted it of him or given him encouragement. Yet now Baelish looked back and said, his voice shaking, barely a whisper, "I will." And Ned could not be angry anymore, could not afford anger. If Baelish would draw himself along that longing as a line to honor and answer the need of the moment... And Baelish paused before he went into the carriage himself, and without looking Ned in the face, said baldly,
You should come. Almost angry, as if the words did not belong in his mouth. The Lannisters will be here for you soon. He paused again, as if he was struggling with himself, and then spat out, half unwillingly, I sent them word. It doesn't matter, Ned said quietly. They'd have learned of it soon enough, and whether they know or not, still I can't break my oath. Get Catelyn and the children away. He shut the door upon them and stepped back. The carriage drove out the front gates, the household guard there already going separately in pairs and threes to slip out other doors and meet them further down along the road. Jory argued the entire time while the rest of the force went melting away, wanting to stay with him. Ned let him argue until the last man had gone and then turned to put his hand on his shoulder. After you've seen Catelyn safe, he said, will you go to the wall? Will you stand with Rob against the Night's King? Jory said, half indignant, My lord, do you think you need to ask? Yes, Ned said. I need to ask. And he saw the question land. Jory straightened, his face gone a little distant. And then he knelt in the courtyard and said, Lo, my lord, I will. Ned nodded, and then he took the great sword from his belt and held it out to him across both his hands. If I don't meet you on the road, take it to Rob, he said, and tell him he has all my love and all my faith. Jory rose and took the blade. He didn't argue anymore, only took Ned's hand and kissed it quickly, then went swiftly to his horse and was gone. Ned stood alone in the courtyard. The doors of the gate opened to the north, and yearned with all his being towards it. But there was a final bond around his heart, holding him back. He drew a deep breath, and then heard the faint jingling of mail coming towards him. He turned and waited as the men in Lannister armor began pouring out of the depths of the keep, looking round themselves uncertainly, until the Kingslayer came out at last behind them in his gold and white. And halted, facing him, staring. Some of the men were searching through the rooms, and one of them, coming out, said, Sir Jamie, the household's gone. There's no one here. Lannister stared at the man, then back at him, frowning. He even darted a glance at his waist and looked still more baffled, or perhaps balked, as if he'd hoped for some sort of battle today. Come, Sir Jamie, Ned said quietly. Let us go to the king. Jamie had no idea what the hell Stark was doing. Or rather, he had an incredibly good idea, except it was foundering on one significant contradiction. Ned was still here. Jamie kept glancing at him as they walked through the corridors, have to make sure he hadn't made some sort of idiotic mistake. But Ned persisted in being right there, and it wasn't that he couldn't have gone. The messenger from Baelish had come to Cersei scarcely 10 minutes before with the news of the pact with Highgarden, and Jaime had taken as many men as he could get together in 5 minutes and gone, but he'd known that they would be too late before they started. He'd already sent men down the King's Road trying to catch the rest of the Starks, but the moment Catelyn Stark reached the Riverlands, and probably 20 miles before, they weren't going to take her without an army. And there wasn't a single reason Ned couldn't have gone with her, as far as Jaime could tell. So he couldn't understand why he hadn't. Apart from that one omission, this was the most brilliant play he'd ever seen. Spend your entire life behaving like a stiff-necked, honor-bound prude who didn't really understand how the game was played and refused to learn. And when sudden chance offered you a massive army right on the cusp of your very bad winter, go ahead and spend your decades of reputation all in a single go to confuse your enemies just long enough to let you make what had the grim carrion smell of a devastating and game-winning move. Robert would call his Baratheon banners, Cersei was sending a frantic raven to father right now, if it hadn't already gone, and Tyrion had gone down to the city to get prices from the agents of every sellsword company in Essos. But this was still going to be very bad. If the Starks could feed that army long enough to march them from the wall down to the Trident, gathering up all the northern bannermen and the river lords as they came, they'd also have them beaten into shape by the time they got there. Which, not coincidentally, was also going to be the time the fucking snow started to fall in the south. The North was going to have a bigger army for once, with vastly more skill in winter, under the command of a brilliant and experienced general, except not the last, because he was still here. Jaime almost asked Stark why twice, but he couldn't bear to let on how utterly at sea he was. And then the third time, with Robert's store up ahead and the raised voices of alarm coming out, he even more couldn't bear not knowing and gritted out, "Stark, what the hell are you doing?" Stark, walking steadily beside him, turned his head to look at him. "You don't want to know what I'm doing, Kingslayer. Otherwise you'd know." And then he stepped forward and went into the room ahead of him. Jaime following on his heels, seething, and Robert turned from Cersei to stare at him, his face masked in rage, his mouth downturned. "You have them?" Cersei said, her voice sharp with hope. Jaime felt his jaw tighten. He shook his head. The whole household was gone. Catelyn, Sansa, and the boy, all the men at arms. "What?" Cersei said, looking back at Stark. "He was waiting for us, alone and unarmed," Jaime said, and even Robert, halfway across the room, paused to stare at him before he wheeled on Ned again. "I ordered you to send for that pup of yours," Robert said to him, low and savage. "Instead, you've made an alliance behind my back, sent him enough grain to feed that fucking army of savages and man-eaters all the way to King's Landing. You've broken the betrothal between our children, sent your wife and children running like thieves in the night. Give me one reason I shouldn't cut off your head right now." Stark looked him in the face and said low and softly, "Robert, my friend, my brother, forget the lies and scheming they've filled your ears with all these years. Forget all this." He gestured around himself a little, as if he meant the room, the Red Keep, or perhaps the entire world. "It doesn't matter. None of it matters now. The Night's King rides. It's not too late. Come north with me now, to the wall. Let us stand and fight together once more, to defend the realms of men." Robert drew back from him a little, his face gone as baffled as Jaime felt. Did Stark actually imagine for an instant that this was going to work? Cersei had to laugh. "I have to congratulate you, Lord Stark," she said, advancing on him. "It's a magnificent performance. I've honestly been wondering if you were a madman ever since last time. But you're not at all mad, are you?" She whirled to Robert. "We can't cut off his head. If you do, the boy will formally declare himself king and use it as an excuse to come south."
"Rob is not coming south," Ned said in weary tones. "He's standing at the wall to face the Night's King."
"Have done," she said to him coldly, and turned back to Robert. "Throw him in a cell instead. We'll send the ravens to all the lords of the North, telling him that he's been arrested for treason, and offering them a chance to have their house become the lords paramount of the North if they raise their banners against the Starks, in loyal service to the crown. You'll have to call up the Baratheon legions."
"Robert," Ned said, low and urgent.
Robert looked back at him, and for a moment the anger faded, went bewildered, and then his face hardened again.
"You've played me for a fool," he said harshly. "All these years I thought you were the one man who didn't want my crown, who didn't want to pull me off the throne and put your own ass in it."
He made a grimace and added,
"And you didn't want it for yourself, did you? But now you want it for your boy. Your son instead of mine."
Stark shut his eyes as if he were in pain, his head bowing.
"Oh, Robert," he said, and his voice sounded so thick with sorrow, Jamie almost couldn't believe it was an act. Well, the sorrow was probably real enough. That was the only explanation that made any sense. That Stark had really been hoping it would work, that he could trade one last time on all those years of pretense. Stark reached up and took the badge of the hand, laid it down on the table beside him. "I must resign as your hand," he said. "Arrest me if you will. If not, then I'll go north, as is my place, to answer the call." "You're not going anywhere," Robert snarled and jerked his head to Jamie. "Get him out of my sight and put him in the deepest, blackest cell you can find. And put on that damn badge," he added savagely over his shoulder as he turned away. Jamie traded a glance with Cersei. Well, at least they'd gotten Stark out as hand. Not that it was worth the disaster of the current situation, but they might as well enjoy what victories they could get. And on the brighter side, the enemy was going to be under the command of a 17-year-old boy, a greedy hothead who thought he'd seen a chance to snatch himself a crown. Jamie scooped up the badge and pinned it on his chest. "Shall we, Lord Stark?" he said, with a grand gesture of his arm, and Ned looked at Robert's back once more. Were those tears in his eyes? And then turned and went out into the corridor. Jamie followed him, the guards falling in on either side of him. They marched him down to the dark with torches. And as they clamped the manacles around his wrists in the cell, Jamie said in deliberately idle tones, leaning against the damp, clammy wall with his arms crossed over his chest, "Do you know, Lord Stark, I feel a sudden kinship with you, really. I betrayed one king, you betrayed the next. Aerys wasn't ever my dearest friend, though, so I suppose you win on points." Stark's head was still bent with the show of grief, and he only slowly looked up at Jaime's prodding and stared at him. The one last yellow torch the nearest soldier was holding reflected deep in his glistening eyes. "Is that what you think?" he said, and though it was soft, there was something terrible in his voice. Something savage. "Well, what would you call it?" Jamie said lightly, which was oddly an effort. "I haven't betrayed my king," Ned Stark said. "He betrayed me." He drew in a sharp breath, turning his head to the side, and whispered, "And now my son will have to answer the call in my stead." "What call would that be?" Jamie said. "Go, Kingslayer," Stark said. "Go back to the false king you and your house have made of the man I once loved. I dare say you'll serve him well. He's the only kind of king you deserve." He bowed his head as a sharp, cold, gusting draft of wind blew out of the depths of the keep and into the cell and extinguished the one torch. Jamie had to put a hand out to the wall to keep from banging into it. And he and the soldiers left Stark behind and walked back to the rest of the guards. And in the dark, his heart was pounding. For no reason he could think of.